This is the Bike Snob of New York City, and you're listening to The Bike Show on Resonance FM 104.4.
Welcome to The Bike Show with me, Jack Thurston, and this is The Bike Show's annual pre-Christmas book review special. We're going to be looking at the best books that have been published about cycling this year, and to do so, I have adopted a slightly different format from past shows. Instead of a small round table, I've decided that we should have a relay race where the baton is a nomination of a best book of the year, and one author hands the baton on to the next. And we have to start somewhere, and there's no better person to start when it comes to book reviews than Fergal MacKay. Fergal is not only the author of almost certainly the biggest book about cycling published this year, he's the author of a terrific new history of the Tour de France, which runs to almost 800 pages and has something very interesting to say about every single edition of the Tour de France. But Fergal is also the resident book reviewer at the Podium Cafe website, where he writes really terrific book reviews. So, on your marks, get set, go!
Hi, my name is Fergal MacKay, author of the complete book of the Tour de France and a reviewer of cycling books in Podium Cafe. The book I want to talk about here draws into the tradition of oral histories popularised by the likes of Studs Terkel. That book is Herbie Sykes' The Race Against the Stasi. Race Against the Stasi takes the Turin-based Sykes away from Italian cycling and sees him immersed in the Soviet Union's Grand Tour, the Peace Race, and sees Sykes immersed in the life of a man who once finished on the podium there, Dieter Wiedemann. Wiedemann's name is not one familiar to many cycling fans, even those with an encyclopedic knowledge of the Tour de France, which Wiedemann rode in 1967, passing Tom Simpson on the Vuelta as the Briton rode himself into an early grave. Partly we don't know about Wiedemann because his professional career was spent sacrificing his chances so that others might win. Mostly we don't know about him because the high points of his career happened on the wrong side of the Iron Curtain, and to date we've paid scant attention to the history of cycling there. Race Against the Stasi tells Wiedemann's story. His childhood in the newly created East Germany in the aftermath of the Second World War, how he became a cyclist, how he dreamed of representing his country at the Peace Race, World Championships and Olympic Games. It also tells of how he came to fall in love and dream of marrying Sylvia Hermann, who, as fate would have it, lived on the other side of the Iron Curtain in West Germany. The Race Against the Stasi then is a Cold War love story which, by and by, also tells some of the story behind Soviet cycling and the Peace Race. Those two factors alone make for a better than average read when it comes to cycling books. What puts Sykes' book ahead of the field is the way the story is told. Rather than telling the story himself, Sykes has allowed those who were there to tell it in their own voices. It's told by Wiedemann and his wife, along with family, friends and contemporaries, and the historical record. As well as voices in the present talking about the past, Sykes adds contributions from News Deutschland, East Germany's communist newspaper, letters to Sylvia, and most notably, pages from Wiedemann's Stasi file. In Sykes' hands, this allows those telling him their stories to appear to interact, giving an almost conversational tone to the book. All of that is why I think I enjoyed the Race Against the Stasi so much. It's the story of a man overlooked by history, but who deserves to be remembered, not just for the life he lived, but for the way that story has been told.
Hi, I'm Herbie Sykes, and there were two cycling books that I read this year which captured my imagination. The first was Amigo, which is a series of correspondence between a Dutch journalist named Nando Boers and the retiring cyclist Pedro Orillo, who's the guy that had a horrific crash at the Giro d'Italia. It's their correspondence prior to and subsequent to Pedro's injuries, and it's a nice premise, nice idea, and I think fairly well realised. The book I'm going to nominate, however, is Domestique by Charlie Wagelius and Tom Southam, notwithstanding the fact that it was published in 2013, not 2014. I only found time to read it this summer. I enjoyed it a great deal. I finished it, I think, in 48 hours, which for me is highly unusual. And it's highly unusual in itself because it's a good cycling autobiography. And they are fairly rare birds in my experience. It's not simply a chronological plod through his career. I think that Tom did a really nice job in rendering Charlie, notwithstanding the fact that it was his first book. Nicely edited, simple narrative, very straightforward. What I most liked about it is the fact that it reveals this evolution from being a cyclist to being a man, a parent, call it what you will, and ultimately the realisation that there is a great deal more to life simply than riding a bike. So I'm going to nominate Charlie Wegelius with Tom Sothern for Domestique.
Alright, my name's Tom Sothern and I have chosen Max Leonard's Lantern Rouge. The Lantern Rouge is something that, even in sort of cycling circles, you don't ever really hear much about. It's kind of like a half-told story. So the fact that Max came up with the idea, even when he told me the synopsis, I thought it was a fantastic idea. And Max basically goes through the history of the Tour de France, picking out different Lantern Rouges and trying to explain the story of both them and of the sort of competition. And he basically, uses it as a tool to paint a wonderful picture of another aspect of the race, which is an important aspect because the Tour de France has always been about as much about entertainment as it has been sporting value. And it's what makes the Lantern Rouge so interesting is the way that people have reacted to it, the way that people have dealt with it. Some people have gone out just to get it because of the rewards that come with it, which seems completely strange, people trying to come last in a race, but it has a value. But then there are other people that are ashamed by it or not impressed by it. So it's a fascinating story. And Max goes back all the way through the history of the Tour de France and finds some sort of lovely stories that would never usually have been told. And you also see the development of the Tour de France as more of a sort of contest of survival and attrition to actually becoming a sort of much more developed sporting event over the years. Which, I find that early Tour de France stuff fascinating. Max writes about it really well. He's clearly involved in the subject and passionate about the subject. He manages to write the book in a way that also tells you his story as well while he's going through these other stories in a really nice way. He gets a good balance between the author and the subject. And, tells it with a nice sort of self-depreciating humour, which I really enjoyed. And a lot of fact in there too, and characters, and it's quite poignant in places, obviously, with Philippe Gaumont. So, a fantastic book, well worth a read.
And my name's Max Leonard, and I have to confess, I haven't read that many cycling books this year, partly because when I'm trying to get a new idea going, I don't think it's good policy to read too much of other people, but it's also slightly embarrassing. I'm going to cheat a bit for my pick and choose an essay by Daniel Freeb in Cycling Anthology Volume 5 called The Cognac Salesman and the Conman. It's about a guy called Jean-François Naquet-Radiguet, who it turns out was briefly the director of the Tour de France in the interregnum in the mid-80s between the Félix Lévitant and Jacques Godet era, and that of Jean-Marie Leblanc, who is kind of credited with revitalising the Tour and making it modern. But from what Freeb writes here, it looks like Naquet-Radiguet has at least a little bit of a share of the credit for all that. I always like Daniel Freeb's writing, and it's very difficult to find a new angle on the Tour with the amount of stuff people are writing about it now. We all tell the same old stories, and this is genuinely new, or new to me at least. I also always like the story behind the race rather than the race itself, and I think that these marginal figures, like Naquet-Radiguet, can often be much more interesting than the guys in the limelight. if I'd read more, I would have liked to have caught Nicole Cook's The Breakaway and Herbie Sykes' Race Against the Stasi. But all in all, I think the cycling anthologies are brilliant, and they put two volumes out this year full of really good writing from lots of different people on varied subjects, and I think the most recent, Volume 5, is my favourite.
My name is Daniel Freeb, and my cycling book of the year is 101 Damnations by Ned Bolting. I was going to go for Herbie Sykes' Race Against the Stasi, but I understand that's already been taken. Anyway, Ned's is a cracking yarn, as always with him. Some real gems in there alongside what is sort of pitched as the untold story of the 2014 Tour de France. There really are some untold tales in there. The chapter on Roger Rivière, I particularly enjoyed his meeting with Marcel Kittel, which has real sort of currency as well as just a piece of cycling journalism, sort of standalone piece of cycling journalism. All in all, an excellent effort by Ned. So that's my cycling book of the year, 101 Damnations by Ned Bolton.
Well, I am greatly indebted to Messrs. Harper and Collins of Hammersmith, London, for the gift some months ago, delivered to my door quite free of charge and without delay by the excellent Royal Mail, of a fine volume entitled Etape. It was an unconfined joy, albeit one which I had not been expecting, at first believing the book in question to be a French language history of the E-type Jaguar, several of which I owned during my more vigorous younger years. Now imagine, if you will, my delighted bewilderment to discover, upon reading the foreword, that this was a collection of essays on the subject of the Tour de France bicycle race, an annual event which our cousins over the water seem rather taken with, and one can see why. Each chapter of Étape unpacked with wit, detail, and considerable verve a separate, and here I quote from the cover, untold story of the Tour de France's defining stages. Well, dear listener, let them be untold no more, for this book admirably compresses and then expands on them with the grace of an accordion player, an instrument which I understand is played in every bar in France every evening to this very day. I must confess, knowing little about the race, that what I found within the pages of this splendid tome quite confounded my expectations. Did you know, for example, that a dour ex-carpenter from some godforsaken part of the country known as the Whittle rode his bicycle faster than anyone else ever did exactly 20 years ago? Sadly, for the aforementioned Mr. Boardman, and never was a name more suited to the man, he was only able to sustain his remarkable effort for a paltry 7.2 kilometres, which equates, I'm led to believe, to roughly 340 yards. Nice try, young man, but no one was going to be fooled by that. Other riders from these shores, I discover upon reading Etape, have fared better, though not always by fair means. A Scottish man from Hong Kong, Malta and High Wycombe, who lived in Biarritz, was so intent on his dastardly course of cheating that he used to force-feed piglets with foie gras and then drink their blood before a race. However, as Etape informs us, a tearful confession a decade ago has left him a changed man. And in 2012, he won a stage, or Etape, as is known in French, all on his own, without letting down the tyres of his opponents or indeed taking a train. This race is relived with excellent clarity in his own words. Indeed, so much of Richard Moore's finest work, and the writer himself was no slouch on a bicycle, incidentally, once finishing in the top 17, I'm led to believe, of the Tour of Fife, is meticulously pieced together from eyewitness testimony, and it positively sparkles with veracity, verve, vim, and verisimilitude. Can't say it. Whether Mr. Moore is recounting the adventures of Mr. Iban Mayo, a Mr. Schleck from Luxembourg, or a Mr. Chiappucci of Italy, who we learn has cushions upon his sofa which bear a copy of his own face, he brings the race to life, lifting it from the page with wonderful descriptive passages. Perhaps the finest of his characters, a man who features in at least two chapters, is a Mr. Lance Armstrong, an astronaut turned charity fundraiser who erroneously claimed to have won the race seven times. Well, even a cursory internet search would dispel that myth. Fortunately, Mr. Moore is on hand to provide the appropriate nuanced skepticism. In short, it is a fine book, and at just £149.99, I would suggest a passable and pleasing little stocking filler. Seriously, though, Richard's book is an absolute belter. The stories are carefully chosen, beautifully researched, and told with controlled, measured prose, the type of understated, dispassionate, and compelling writing which is Richard's hallmark. I suggest you buy it, but then I suggest you read it as well. He knows what he's doing, damn him. And incidentally, I've always yearned to have my books have such a beautiful photographic cover as Etap has. Instead, I get a cartoonish version of my face all over my books. Richard's are better. Simple as.
It's Richard Moore here. My book of 2014 is The Race to Truth by Emma O'Reilly. It was either this one or Nicole Cook's autobiography. Both of them are very good reads. Of the two, one is quite bitter, and surprisingly, it's not the one by Emma O'Reilly, which is the story of her time working as a soigneur with US Postal and her dealings with Lance Armstrong as he returned from cancer and won the Tour de France. She left the job there after a couple of years and went on to be one of the first sort of whistleblowers, one of the first people who began to talk about exactly what had gone on with Armstrong and within the team in terms of doping. But the book is, it begins with a foreword by Lance Armstrong, which is the first surprise. And she paints a far more nuanced, far more balanced picture of Armstrong, where she reveals him to be a human being rather than just a drugs cheat, a villain, the type of sort of caricature that he appears to be in some of the other books and portrayals of him. And it's all the better for that. It's a fascinating book. Armstrong to Emma O'Reilly is clearly more than just a drugs cheat. He's a human being. He's an interesting one, a complex one, deeply flawed one, but a very interesting one. And as a reader, you find the story, the inside account of what it's like to be a soigneur at that level, very, very interesting. So I thoroughly enjoyed it. It's well written and a really very interesting and surprising book.
I spoke to Emma O'Reilly by phone about the book she was nominating, which is a book that was published a couple of years ago, called The Secret Race, written by Tyler Hamilton.
Because I was there for a lot of it, it was so much easier to visualise the situations and the hotels and the training areas and stuff. So it was very easy for me to kind of become part of the book, if that makes sense. Because that's one of the things I love about reading. You become part of something and you can put yourself in the scene. And with Tyler's, obviously, it was very easy to do that. But what I did like about it, he didn't try and make himself out to be too much of a victim. A lot of these books on, because I've read a few of the books on the kind of, when they've been caught doping and stuff, and I can understand why, but they try sometimes to make out, to me, I feel anyway, that they're somewhat of a victim of the situation, and they are a victim of the situation, but they're still adults who made a decision. Whereas Tyler didn't really look for sympathy. I feel Tyler didn't want to be rehabilitated. Tyler just wanted to get the hell out of Dodge, if you know what I mean. Mm. And he's getting on with his life, and his life doesn't... He still trains cycling and stuff, but it doesn't mean his core life isn't about cycling.
Yeah.
It's about getting on with his life. You know, he's over up in Missoula, and he's not trying to go to bike race or trying to kind of keep it as part of his life, yeah, per se, in the way that some other cyclists, and some of the cyclists need to be rehabilitated. They were still of a racing age, so they had to get back into racing. And they choose to get back into racing. It's what they wanted to do. Whereas Tyler and the life he seems to have, like, I'm not quoting for Tyler, but to me, looking at what Tyler's doing, he's just getting on with his life, and his life, cycling isn't part of his life.
Any other books that you'd like to see written in the future, just about anything in our sport?
Oh, that's a good question. Do you know what? A nice feel-good factor about some cyclists who stay keen, got results and lived happily ever after. That would be a lovely story to write.
Any nominations for who you'd like to write that?
For who I'd like? Ooh, that's another one I'd have to have a think about. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, you're saying it would be fun just to write a book on the fun time. You know, and because we had some great laughs. And there's some great people in it. Be nice to write a positive book on it all.
So you may not have put your pen down for the last time.
No, I hope I've put my pen down for the last time. I want no more excitement in my life. I want a nice, quiet, boring life. Go back to that two dogs in the garden that I left cycling for. That's what I want to go back to.
Well, that was Emma O'Reilly crossing the finishing line in our experimental book review relay. I hope you enjoyed that. And here with me to pick over the book year is a regular contributor on the Bike Show Book Review, Guy Andrews, founding editor, now ex-editor of Ruler magazine, who joins us from an extended training camp in Mallorca. Guy, you're relaunching your elite level cycling career, yeah?
Not quite, Jack. But yeah, it's nice to be out here in the sunshine. I'm enjoying the riding very much. It's fantastic out here.
And so you're doing loads of riding and you're not looking at any books at all?
Actually, no, far from it. I've been reading a fair bit, but I've also been thinking about what I do next, because obviously since leaving Ruler, I've kind of had a sort of a bit of a sabbatical, shall we say. But I'm keen to get back into the circus ring, so to speak. And yeah, I'm keen to start doing some more work in publishing.
And of the books that our relay racers discussed just earlier, are there any that stand out for you, or any glaring omissions among those that were picked?
Well, the standout is Herbie's book, The Race Against the Stasi. I think I think it will stand up as being a bit of a classic in years to come. I think it's certainly the book of this year. I think omissions, there's one that I quite enjoyed. I think the translation is always a bit difficult. That's Carlos Arribas' book, Akana, Akanya. But that's a brilliant book, and I really enjoy Carlos's insight into the world of pro cycling. So and certainly his history and his knowledge of Spanish cycling is pretty much second to none. So that's worth a read. That's kind of one that's gone under the radar a little bit, I think. But yeah, I think if it was a book of the year, it's Herbie's book.
Yeah, I think everybody would have probably picked that, which is, we ran into a little bit of trouble with people picking second bests for their nominations. I'd put, it wasn't published, or it came out in paperback this year. The first edition was last year, but I would put in an honourable mention for a book that I think a lot of people would be surprised that I enjoyed this one. And this is It's All About the Bike, by Sean Yates, Sean Yates's autobiography. And I read that just after reading Michael Barry's Dancing in the Shadows, or whatever it was. And there could not be two more different cycling autobiographies. And I much preferred Sean's. I just thought it was a really interesting glimpse into a fascinating life. And I warm to Sean. He's not someone who's made a huge load of cash out of professional cycling, but he has been a kind of an absolute pro in terms of all the professional values that there are in cycling. But he's sort of done it in his own way and come from an interesting background, ridden a lot of the same roads that we've all ridden in southern England around the southeast. And I think the book is told with a good deal of quite deep honesty that I appreciated and enjoyed.
Yeah, it's interesting. I haven't actually read Sean's book, but one story that I really like about him is actually relates to Mallorca, which is whenever he came out here on a training camp, one of his favourite rides was to do a complete lap of the island, which must be around about 400 kilometres, I think. I don't know. But apparently that was one of the things that he had to do before he went home. I don't know whether that's true or not. It might be an urban myth, but it certainly sticks in my mind whenever I'm out here.
Yeah, one of the things I liked is that in his early days as a top professional, he went out to visit Alan Piper in Australia, and went out with sort of basically on a big bicycle tour with a tent, panniers, and all the stuff that you'd have for a bicycle tour, and just went touring, and then hung out, you know, with the Aussie pro riders, and just that kind of out and out bike person. I just found that very appealing, and I thought that was a good book.
I think that's the thing with Sean Yates, is that it's funny how many pros sort of hang up the wheels and then don't touch the bike for 20 years. And the amazing thing with Sean Yates is that he carried on racing for donkey's years after he retired as a professional. But he still really loves riding the bike. That's the thing that's most important to him. I remember we did a story on him in Ruler many years ago, and Matt Seaton interviewed him for the piece we did. And, you know, he was kind of, I don't know what the word is really. I think he's just sort of a kind of dyed in the wool old roadie. And, you know, he gets excited about cycling in a way that I think most fans do, which is quite unusual in the pro. You know, they tend to have all the corners knocked off them pretty quickly and end up being quite cynical about the game. But yeah, anyway, I'd like to read it actually, because I haven't had a chance yet. But
Oh, well, I'll lend you my copy when you come back. So Guy, let's take a step back from individual books for a minute and talk about the boom in cycling publishing, because I think there is a boom going on right now, which is in sharp contrast to the rest of the publishing industry, which I guess with the exception of cookbooks backed by TV series is in a kind of crisis, a kind of long-term crisis of book publishing. Do you think that's a fair assessment, that cycling is bucking a pretty dismal trend?
Yes, I think it probably is. It's quite interesting that it is only in the last, certainly in the last 5 years, that there's been so many books launched every year. I mean, we'd have to wait 2 or 3 years for a book to be published on, you know, say the Tour de France or what have you. And now there's, you know, half a dozen each year. I don't necessarily think that it's indicative of the rest of the publishing industry. I'm not sure that it's as bad as people make out. I think certainly novels are, you know, fiction is suffering. But I certainly think, you know, how-to books and, if you like, coffee table, I hate that expression, but anyway, coffee table books still seem to be very much in, you know, doing really well. So I think it's a mixed thing. I think most publishers are realizing they're going to have to change their game. I think that's what's important. And I think what we'll find is smaller niche publishers, independent publishers, will start coming to the fore. I mean, for example, you know, Unbound, the way they've done their publishing model, which is basically a kind of like a Kickstarter idea, where readers vote for the books that they want, I think is really, really interesting. I mean, they're the publishers that brought out Letters of Note a couple of years ago, which is a wonderful book. And I think that's kind of the way it's going to be. I think it's slowly becoming slightly more democratic, rather than, you know, people get the books they want rather than the books that they're delivered. So I think that's certainly the case in the general publishing world. And I think from the point of view of cycling media, I think we're a little bit, I wouldn't say complacent, but I think there is a certain complacency in that there seems to be a feeling at the moment that it doesn't really matter what book you do. If you get a book out there, you know, the cycling public will buy it. And to a great lesser extent, I think that's true, because there is a huge desire for knowledge about cycling. Because, you know, let's be honest, cycling in the UK and, you know, for all intents and purposes in the US and the English speaking countries is quite a new phenomenon, really.
Let's look at the boom a bit more in a bit more detail. Is it strictly road racing, sort of professional road racing? You know, mountain biking, are they getting a look in? You know, are other kinds of cycling getting a look in?
When I was working with Rouleur, we were looking at publishing Charlie Kelly's book, which has just come out. I haven't actually seen it yet, but I can imagine it's quite an interesting book. This is a very interesting character, but those early days of mountain biking, I think, are going to start to become quite a popular source of nostalgia books, if you like.
So mountain biking, you think, may be a kind of growth area. I mean, Andy Waterman, former editor of Privateer, wrote a piece about, I think, for The Independent a few months ago, about, you know, how mountain biking was in the doldrums. And you used to work in mountain biking in the 90s, right? So when it was, you know, flying high. Do you think Andy's right?
I don't know is the honest answer. I mean, when we launched Privateer magazine, I thought that there was going to be a rekindling of enthusiasm to get out on mountain bikes. And I think there has been. I think it's just taking a lot longer than I think we expected or hoped would happen. But I think Actually, interestingly, Jack, I can big up one of your books, because I think Lost Lanes, for example, my view is that I think that there will be a lot more publishing about the experience side of cycling rather than the sort of more, I mean, a lot of the books I've written in the past have been quite technical books. And I think there's less desire for that now. And there's a lot more desire for, you know, where to ride, how to ride, the nuances of cycling as well, I think, are going to be have not actually been communicated that well. So I think there's a lot of books that could be written about cycling, and they don't necessarily have to be about the bike itself and the Tour de France. One of the main problems I think with that is the fact that authors do tend to get trapped into the publishing mistake of what is commercially viable, what is going to sell at what time of year, rather than actually what is the book that I really want to write. I think there will be a lot more books about, say, for example, mountain biking and where to go mountain biking and the history of mountain biking, as well as cycle touring. I mean, why not? I mean, I think there are areas that are very few books.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the why not is that all this information and more than you could ever fit into a book is available on the internet. So you don't need a book.
Yeah, well, you don't need a book, but then everybody does love a book. I mean, I don't think you can get away from that. It's interesting because I was in there's a really quite quirky English bookshop in Palma over here in Mallorca. And he's got millions of books. I mean, some unbelievable stuff. And I was talking to him about cycling books, and he actually came up with a really interesting point, which was that sort of pre-1990, there were very few books on cycling written in English. I don't know if you remember back in those days, but I think there was probably about a dozen books written about cycling in English then. And certainly not the level of publishing that we have now. And he said there needs to be more, and I thought, well, that's quite interesting, because I was thinking there were too many. But I think it's that strength in depth. I mean, if you look at, say, for example, French or German books on cycling, there's way more. And then to take a different sport, I mean, if you take motor racing as a good example, there's billions of books written about motor racing, not just, you know, the obvious stuff, Formula One and IndyCar racing. You know, it's a mixture of everything. So I think we are entering a time where I think we just need to be a little bit more creative about the titles that we suggest to publishers, because I think publishers just want to have tick boxes ticked. If we take Herbie Sykes' book as a great example, The Race Against the Stasi, it's a book about someone that no one's going to have heard of. I mean, only the very sort of aficionado side of the cycling media probably will have heard of Dieter Weidmann. But anyway, the point being is that I think those books are the books that people will find interesting if they're into sport and into good writing, as opposed to necessarily just being into the Tour de France and they've just bought a bike, so they want to learn all about it. So I think, I don't know, at the moment, there's about four or five different genres that we're sort of plugging up. And I think potentially in cycling, there's 30 or 40 genres that could be plugged up.
As books compete with the internet, they have to become more obviously thing-like, don't they? Because the thing that a book is that the internet isn't, is it is actually a physical object. And that physical object has to be attractive and has to have all the characteristics that the internet can't provide. I mean, that's what you tried to do and did very successfully with a number of books that you published at Ruler, latterly with Bloomsbury, to make them very attractive books. I mean, I'm thinking particularly of the copy book, which is very photo heavy. I mean, that wouldn't work in the same way on the internet. I mean, you could have, you know, a really nice slideshow or something like that with a lot of those images, but it's not something that you would, you know, look at again and again and kind of linger over.
It's interesting you say that, but then look at the success that cycling anthologies achieved. You know, I mean, I think people always want to buy books. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm a dinosaur, and I'm thinking it's just because I like books myself. But I think you can't beat the idea of sitting down with a book. You know, it's you know, you sit at your computer all day, so the last thing you want to do is pick up a computer to read something.
I think the cycling anthology works very well in the context of long reads, the sort of long form revival that we're seeing at the sort of more cerebral end of the internet, and I think it's, you know, a series of long reads, and I think people are getting tired of what they read in the monthly cycling magazines, that it's pretty poor stuff and in the main, and want to have something better. And, you know, for the price of two newsstand cycling magazines monthlies, you can buy the cycling anthology, which will give you, you know, a lot more words and certainly a lot more thought to occupy yourself with.
This is the point I make to everybody, really, is that I'd rather settle down with a book that's taken, you know, a few months to put together rather than a few weeks, as most, you know, unfortunately most magazines, they have to take a few weeks to put together. It's the nature of the beast. But, you know, that's the thing I think with cycling anthology is that comes off the page, is that it does feel like those people actually wanted to write what they're talking about, rather than you know, okay, we need to get all these tick boxes ticked, and we need to make sure that we've got this, that and the other in, because it's that time of year.
Well, it's October, so we've got to have a group test of rain jackets.
I could talk about that all day long, Jack, as well, you know. But the point is that I think the beauty of journalism and of writing like cycle anthologies, it's a bit more like sitting down to a hearty winter stew than it is to sit down to a summer salad. You know, it's different, and it's probably more satisfying.
So in this sustainable, exciting future with 30 or more cycling genres to enjoy, what are we going to see that we haven't seen so far? And what are your prognostications for the future?
Well, I mean, obviously, I'd like to see more from, you know, guys like Carlos Arribas, Herbie Sykes, you know, the guys that do cycling anthology. I'd like to see more from them. Unfortunately, books are not commercially, independently viable, because a writer can't give up 6 months, 12 months to write a book. Well, they can, but they certainly won't. You know, they certainly won't be paid for their time. But unfortunately, that's the nature of books. You do them basically because you want to do them. You don't do them because it's going to pay the rent.
Well, that doesn't sound very sustainable to me.
I think that's partly because the problem with most publishers is that they are a huge engine that needs a lot of petrol, and it usually means that the author, I hope I'm not speaking out of turn here, but the author ends up, you know, not being paid as well as they probably should. So I actually think it is sustainable. I just think it needs someone with a little bit more imagination to structure the book deals in a slightly more pragmatic way, to be honest. I think that's the best way to look at it.
Okay, so economics aside, from a consumer point of view, what kind of things would you like to see on the shelves?
Well, I'll be giving away a few secrets, Jack, because I'm actually working on a couple myself. But I think personally, I'd like to see a little bit more about the nuts and bolts of, from the point of view of road cycling, the nuts and bolts of the race game. How it works, because I still think there's a huge misunderstanding in the English speaking world about the game of cycling. And it's very interesting that you have books by guys like Sean Yates, and, you know, Sean Kelly had a book out this year. They don't really get, I haven't read Sean's book, Sean Yates's book, but they don't really get to actually saying, this is why this happens. And I think that to me, is a bit of a miss, really. I think, you know, you go to Belgium and everyone's grandmother understands cycling over there, and they know it inside out, but they really understand it. I mean, it's a bit like, I'd say we probably understand the rules of cricket in England. It's not we're all big fans of cricket, but there's some sort of osmosis that comes with playing sport at school, and, you know, you learn the rules, and cycling is on catch-up when it comes to that, I think. So I'd like to see a lot more informative books, a lot more cerebral books, I guess you'd probably say.
And you've got a book out that you've co-authored relatively recently. I haven't had a look at it, but it's had a glowing reception.
Well, Bike Mechanic, it was it was kind of a work in progress. When I was working on Rouleau magazine, I'd always skulk off and go and hang out with the mechanics and take pictures of what they were up to. And Taz and I at races ended up hooking up with some really quite delightful guys that basically keep the pros on the road. So, you know, we did some nice stories with them for the magazine and also for the book. It's the culmination of those two things really dovetailing together. But and I'd worked with Rowan Dubash for years before I started as a cycling journalist. In fact, I've known Rowan for an awful long time. And his take on fixing bikes is fairly unique, to say the least. And we always talked about the idea of doing a book together. As it transpired, it was a long-winded process because trying to get the two of us together in one room was hard enough, but actually getting down to writing stuff about fixing bikes was another. But I think we quite enjoyed it for the main part, and I think that comes out when you look at the book. But as I said, I say in the introduction to it, it's by no means comprehensive, and I'm not going to put this out as an official line, but I think a part two will have to be necessary at some point.
Well, that's how you fit the motor into the bottom bracket.
Oh yeah, don't start that.
Is that what's getting you round the hills? That's how you managed to do your Sean Yates style lap of the island, is it?
That would be the best way, I think, yeah.
Okay, Guy Andrews, we look forward to hearing what you've alluded to just now in a little bit more detail when you're ready to come on the bike show and talk about it. But thanks for filling us in and giving us your reflections on the state of cycling book publishing.
Thanks, Jack.
Well, my thanks to all the contributors to this edition of The Bike Show, this book review special. And if you want to find out more information about the books mentioned in the show, there's a full listing on The Bike Show website, www.thebikeshow.net. And of course, if you do choose to buy any of them, either for yourself or as a gift, you can do so at your local bookshop. But if you prefer to use a certain omnipresent online retailer, then there will be links to the Amazon pages for the books from the Bike Show website. And if you buy as a result of clicking through, then a few pennies come the Bike Show's way, help to pay for the bandwidth and various other running costs of keeping the show on the road. That's it for the Bike Show for 2014. I'm aware it's been a rather thinner year than you've come to be used to. There is a very good reason for that. And I'll be happy to tell you more about the future of the Bike Show in the new year. Until then, have a tremendous Christmas and a very happy new year. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.